Mary Bishop with the Roanoke Times says human beings tend to criticize each other, but classification of people by the government could undermine our democratic society. She believes this is what happened to the 8,000 people sterilized in Virginia during the 20th century.
It's very easy for us to decide that certain people are less than. When you set up a system to target people in this way, the system takes on a life of its own. Corners are cut and safeguards are forgotten.
The 1924 law that authorized the use of forced sterilizations to prevent the so-called inferior from reproducing ushered in the age of eugenics. UVA law professor Paul Lombardo explains that the era didn't last for long.
The majority of the sterilizations were done between around 1930 and 1945.
By the late 1950s, most sterilizations were performed on people who had been diagnosed with developmental disabilities or mental retardation. The argument was that these people could not take care of their own children.
The language of the original eugenics legislation was taken mostly out of the law by 1974. The last language that specified you could sterilize people for so-called hereditary reasons didn't leave the statute until 79.
And as new technologies are developed to improve the human race, new questions will arise as well. Last year, the entire sequence of the human genome was mapped out, though it could take decades for geneticists to fully understand the complexities of the code that makes us who we are. Lombardo says scientific solutions to societal problems can be valid as long as caution is exercised. The question is, do the means justify the ends?
The hardest question to be answered in using the new reproductive technologies, in using such things as in vitro fertilization or prenatal genetic diagnosis, is how much do these look like the methods of the past? In what ways do these intrude on the rights of individuals?
Delegate Mitch Van Yeres of Charlottesville thinks it could be dangerous to have the power to genetically modify basic human characteristics at will. That's one reason he introduced the Profound Regret Resolution, which passed in the last session of the General Assembly.
We have to differentiate between doing good manipulating genes and knowing the DNA, which we can say we can control some hereditary diseases, but we don't want to try to control what the human being would be like.
Phil Fison is president of the Lynchburg Depressive Disorders Association. The group would like to see a permanent collection created at an educational institution devoted to the study of the victims' lives. Such records are important, Fison says, for they will help guide us into the future.
We really need to look in terms of how science is being applied today and how that may be looked at 50 and 100 years down the road, especially when it comes to full human cloning. And we know when they've done it in animals that you've had some horrendous mistakes. And what's going to happen when you have a tragic outcome involving a human being who's been cloned?
Doris Zallin is professor of science and technology studies at Virginia Tech. A geneticist by training who now works in the emerging field of bioethics, Zallin says the completion of the Human Genome Project has raised as many questions as it has answered about our genetic makeup.
These new insights that we'll get into our own genes are far beyond what those early eugenicists ever dreamed of. I mean, the early eugenicists looked at people and said, well, they had some kind of problem, and therefore it was genetic, and therefore one could solve this problem by preventing people from reproducing. Now, we can peek directly into the genetic material and look at the genes themselves.
Zallin says the improved science can be used to predict who might be susceptible to certain diseases. The refined knowledge of genetics offers many potential benefits, but Zallin cautions it may just as easily bring on a new form of eugenics.
This raises the question of, could we once again be drawn into a position in which we start judging people by their genes, this time by their DNA sequences? And might we begin to discriminate against people or marginalize people because their genes are different or because their potential health problems are expensive?
In gene therapy, a malfunctioning gene is replaced by one that works in order to correct a genetic illness. However, scientists are not yet ready to manipulate genes in the way that Van Yeres suggests. Zallin explains that promising technology still needs to be worked out.
It's turned out to be harder to get the genes into the right places. It's turned out to be harder to get the genes to function properly.
Zallin says there is the potential for parents to augment their children's life if these techniques are perfected.
Being taller or thinner or smarter or more athletic, these are the kinds of qualities that we think parents might be interested in promoting in their children. And in a few years, we may have the genetic tools to do that.
The choice whether or not to develop such techniques is fraught with ethical questions, but lessons offered by the memory of the eugenics movement offers the chance to inform that choice.
It's really our responsibility as a society to make sure that we don't repeat those same mistakes, that we don't judge people by their genes. In fact, we all have a few genes that are less than perfect, and it's wrong to prevent people from having opportunities for education or jobs or insurance because of their genetic makeup.
For now, Zallin says scientists need to do more research into how genes work before they develop some of these techniques. She cites the early reliance of the eugenicists on Mendel's law as an example of the importance of getting the science right.
We truly don't understand the multidimensionality of genes, all the different things that they could do. Originally, we thought humans have about 100,000 different genes. Thanks to the Human Genome Project, it looks like we have about 30,000 to 40,000 different genes, not much more than a fruit fly. All our genes have capacities that go beyond what we originally thought genes could do. And it would be extremely foolish to mark or label people because of their genes when we don't understand all the various dimensions of gene function.
J. David Smith, Dean of Education and Human Services at Longwood College, insists that the humanities must be taught alongside the sciences at universities to instill a sense of ethics in tomorrow's inventors.
The people who were involved in the eugenics movement believed that ethics were inherent in the science and medicine of eugenics. They could see that everything should be done to produce the strongest population of people. The ethics and the principles that will help us make the right decisions don't lie in science. They don't lie in medicine. And I think only with a better informed citizenry can we carry on the conversations and make the kinds of decisions that are going to be necessary to humanize the science that is developing at such a rapid pace.
Virginia's eugenics history will be the subject of an exhibit that will open in 2004 at the U.S. Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. Paul Lombardo is helping to set up the exhibit by providing historical materials. Mary Bishop hopes to publish the life stories of survivors. The state of North Carolina is looking into reconciling its involvement with eugenics. And perhaps the best legacy we can give to the surviving victims of the eugenics movement is to look at where we are going and decide, in their memory, that we should proceed with extreme caution. Sean Tubbs, WVTF News.